Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Earth 911's Sustainability in Your Ear, the podcast conversation with a changemaker working to accelerate the transition to a sustainable carbon neutral society. I'm your host, Mitch Ratcliffe. We're going to talk shoes today, making them more sustainable and rethinking the design for better health. I recently tested a pair of Panther high-cut shoes from Wildling Shoes and named it a greener shopping difference maker. On our scale of 3 degrees of sustainability in a product, Difference Maker is the second level and represents a product that reduces environmental impacts by at least 50% compared to traditional designs. We're joined today by Anna Jona, who is co-founder with her husband of Engelkirchen, Germany-based Wildling Shoes. They make a wide range of shoes for women, men, and kids, practicing sustainable design and manufacturing using a minimalist approach to the design of the shoe itself that produces a light, comfortable, and durable walking experience. I've worn the Wildling Panther for about 4 months, and these high-cut shoes, which are made with certified organic cotton, hemp, and synthetic and recycled rubber and cork soles, have held up wonderfully over hundreds of miles of walking. And these shoes are better for the planet. In 2020, Wildling Shoes averaged just a quarter pound of Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions per pair. Since scope 3 emissions, which are all of the emissions associated with sourcing the raw materials and preparing them for manufacturing, as well as shipping and everything that follows the production of the shoe, since scope 3 emissions typically account for 90% or more of the total carbon emissions associated with a product, we estimate that the total carbon footprint of the average pair of Wildling shoes is about 4.5 pounds per pair, which is substantially better than the roughly 20 to 22 pounds for the ordinary shoe. A certified B Corporation, Wildling is working to reinvent shoes after starting out as a response to Anna and her husband's becoming frustrated with the shoes available for their children. They work continually to reduce the environmental impact of their shoes, which are handmade in factories selected for their environmental and labor practices. Many shoemakers are taking important steps towards sustainability, and Wildling is a leader. We wanted to learn more, and you can learn more about Wildling shoes at us.wildling, that's W-I-L-D-L-I-N-G, us.wildling.shoes. Welcome to the show, Anna. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Mitch. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I want to start off by asking what it was about traditional shoes that bothered you when you put them on your kids, because I have a lot of gait issues and your shoes have helped. Tell us about that.
Oh, that's good to hear. Our kids grew up barefoot, so we were really used to seeing them walk naturally and move in such an agility and lightness that it was really a pleasure to watch. From the moment we put shoes on their feet, that would change and they would be a lot more clumsy and they would actually also not like the shoes, like the feel of the shoes on their feet. So what we set out to do was to try and develop a shoe that would allow them to move like almost as freely and naturally as if they were barefoot. So that was the start into this idea and the journey.
Well, I get a lot of comments about the design of the shoes. People, those are interesting. Why is the minimal design healthier? And we'll get into the sustainability later, but why particularly healthier?
Well, our concept was to have a shoe that is as little shoe as possible. So basically what we did, also because we really had no idea of how to actually develop a shoe and how to make a shoe, was to look into a shoe and to take out anything that we thought was not necessary. Mm-hmm. And we ended up with a product that kind of feels more like a glove. And the thing is that our shoe is supposed to, you know, to adapt to the shape of your foot and not to make mm-hmm. your foot adapt to the shape of a shoe, which is really important because that really can lead to deformations and a lot of pain, actually. And also to have a really minimal outsole so that you can feel the ground, which is also really important.
Right.
And yeah, to see how, I mean, my husband is a biomechanic, like he has a, he studied biomechanics. So he looked at what would this product have to do so that it could later move exactly the way, you know, the foot wants to move. Like, where does it have to be, you know, flexible and move with you so that it won't restrict your motion. So that's where the minimal design comes in, because the less you put there and the more like flexible and soft the materials will be, your foot can just do its usual work. Like, it will not support your muscle structure or anything. So your foot actually gets to do the work it would do almost as if it was barefoot.
So starting a shoe company is hard enough, and you started from scratch, essentially. You didn't know how to build this shoe and learned, but you also embraced sustainability from the very beginning. Did that make launching even harder, or was that actually something that gave you a mission that you could really pursue?
Well, in the beginning, just, you know, getting the prototypes right, like getting this development, getting the product to look and work more or less like we envisioned it to be, was super hard. So we knew that we did not want to produce something that we knew was extremely harmful. But we also knew that we could not do this perfectly from the start. So we kind of set ourselves like a minimum, you know, that a minimum level of sustainability that we needed to have, for example, to have a like an amount of recycled rubber in the outsole, to have only like organic certified materials, which was hard enough to find actually for the footwear industry back then. And said, okay, that's the minimum that we can do right now in order to launch and to also, you know, to start selling, to have some kind of resources to put again into more development. But we also said from the start that we cannot, you know, we have goals that are much bigger than that, that we cannot lose out of sight. So, you know, the moment this started rolling, the money went back into developing more sustainable options and also, of course, to improve the function. And a lot of money went straight back there. Like, we didn't put money, for example, in marketing, but it always went back to the team, but also to research and development.
So what do you say were the critical decisions you made in terms of making a sustainable company launch? And did you find you had to make trade-offs between environmental and social goals, for instance?
Well, I think the most important things for us were, you know, to have these ideals and to stick to them, and then also to understand that it's not enough, for example, like if my husband and I have these ideals and these values, but that we need to kind of bring them into the company, that it's, you know, I mean, it's already in the people that you recruit, but it's also, you know, to get together and to talk about our vision, to say which values we want to pursue and to kind of set these guidelines for the company. Right. So that was really important. And also that is a work in progress. And that is something that we, you know, revisit regularly in order to get back together with the team and to kind of set this focus. And I think that's really important, because that also attracts people to the company that really, really have a lot of passion in pursuing these goals. And I think, of course, it's a huge challenge and a lot of resources go into this. This is not something that, you know, somebody will pay you back for. Like, it's a lot of resources, both in terms of team and of time and of resources and of research. It's usually comes with a higher cost. Like, these materials are expensive. We, you know, we want to have all the transparency. So there's a lot more in partnerships that we need to build. But what we saw was that we hardly needed any money in advertisement. So we kind of were saving on some other end. So from the beginning, we were really transparent, and, you know, we kind of took people along on the journey, and we were kind of very open in showing what we're doing. And I think that, together, of course, with also the function of the product, kind of led to the fact that people would keep talking about what we're doing and would keep talking about the shoes. So there was a lot of word of mouth, and that really helped us, you know, sustain our growth in a very stable way.
So telling the story, being transparent about your process on the site actually fueled the marketing that you weren't spending money on. You told a story and people started to share your story.
That's true. Yes, that's true.
Now, did you embrace the idea of being a B Corporation and supporting 1% for the planet at the very outset? And was that practical?
Mm-hmm. No, we did not. Actually, I'm not sure if B Corp already existed, or at least we did not know about it.
You're right on the cusp.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, probably. It was something that we did kind of for ourselves a bit later on, because we saw that, you know, that there are so many things that you can pay attention to, and there are so many things that you should be working on. So we kind of used the assessment from B Corp as also some kind of a framework and a guiding tool to see, okay, which are the areas that we're already quite good at, and which are the areas that we should, you know, put more focus on. And that kind of also helped the team to steer and to take some strategic decisions. So actually, in the beginning, we did that for us. And then we thought, okay, now if we've passed the assessment, we can as well go for the certification. And the 1% for the planet, that's actually something that we would not have been able to do much earlier, because we don't have investors. So we had to, you know, to grow from we were bootstrapping, and we needed the money always to also fund, you know, the next year and the growth of the company. So from the moment that it became possible, we kind of looked for options. But actually, we've come to the conclusion that, you know, it's a huge challenge to kind of wrap your head around. But if we're doing this right, no money should be left over at the end on the bottom line. You know, if we're making a big profit that then we can kind of donate from, then probably we're doing something wrong beforehand. So then we're not redistributing the money evenly enough. So that's a huge challenge to tackle, because of course you need some money to safeguard the company. But yeah, what's the right balance?
Well, it took 50 years for Patagonia to go from what you're describing to giving it all to the planet. I hope that you get there too.
Yes.
When you did add 1% for the planet, did you find that brought more people in? Did people look for a 1% company to buy their shoes from?
Well, it's our main market is in Germany. It's still the biggest chunk of our market is here. And 1% for the planet is not that well known here as it would be in the US. So I think what this gave us were great conversations, a great network to tap into, meaningful exchange on eye level with all kind of very interesting people and organizations. But I'm not so sure it actually, it boosted our sales or something like that. I don't think so. But that, I think, is probably due to the fact we can never know also how many people kind of came to us through there. But I think here we've established ourselves as a brand with those values. Like we don't need that certification or that seal, that proof of what we're doing, actually, I think.
Well, so let's talk about the shoes.
For us, and it's more in terms of transparency to actually be able to show to the outside that, you know, what we're saying is based on something.
I think that speaks volumes both about, you know, your commitment and the willingness of the market to embrace somebody who has decided to do the right thing and is being clear and complete about disclosing what they're doing. Let's talk about the shoes. Now, the soles are made from synthetic rubber sourced from both recycled materials and cork. And when we were doing the research on the article, we talked a little with you about what you're working on to eliminate the use of petroleum. So how's that going? And tell us about how you came up with the structure of the sole.
Yeah, I mean, the outsole is, it has a third of virgin material, of virgin synthetic rubber. Then it has a big part, like 40% is recycled rubber. And then the rest is silica and cork. So silica we're trying to get from a bio-based source. The good thing about our outsole is that we can fully recycle it. So we have run all the tests and we're actually ready to launch that also as a program. We can take off the outsoles of used shoes and return them straight into our own outsole program. So they will become, you know, the recycled parts in new outsoles. So we can actually fully reuse these outsoles, and they have a very good quality, meaning that there's quite little, like we have a very thin outsole. So, you know, if it would rub off, like, first of all, you get all the microplastic and also on the other hand, it just doesn't last long. So this is a very long lasting, high quality outsole that also in the production cycle is quite fine if you compare it to other, you know, outsole material. So it's quite clean. So we're quite happy with this for now. We are checking other options, but what we've seen so far is that when you go for bio-based materials, and there are some first ones that, you know, that you can check, usually they are not very well recyclable. So for now, it right. appears that, you know, this is for now the better option, but we're keeping our eyes open. We're also working with other companies, sometimes also startups, to see whether, you know, there's a lot of movement in the industry. So I'm quite sure there will be better solutions in the future. But right now, we have our focus on recycling.
We'll talk a little more about that in a bit. Now, the other thing you've focused on is regeneratively produced materials. You're using some of them today. What's involved in sourcing that material? Do you have to go to farms and say, we would like you to grow things this way? Or are farms coming to you and saying, we are producing regeneratively grown cotton, for instance, or hemp?
Well, there are two materials right now that are already in use in our shoes. So one is wool that is sourced from, it's grazing projects. It's sheep, herds of sheep that are grazing in biospheres. So they actually have a positive impact also on these areas. And they are mainly kept for this purpose, and which is easy because here the state is funding these kind of projects, so the shepherds can actually live from that. And the wool is usually just thrown away because it's a very coarse wool, which is perfect for shoes, but usually not used in other types of fashion. So that's one of the materials, and there you actually... we work with a partner who is onboarding these shepherds into this program. Mm-hmm. He is collecting the wool, he's sorting it, he's washing it, and he's, you know, sending the wool to the weaver that then creates our materials. So here it's kind of actively looking for shepherds that want to be part of the program. And then we use hemp and flex, which is it's the waste product of oil production, of hemp oil production and flax oil production. And we're using that as, it's a non-woven, like it's a kind of fleece, and we're using it as a lining and also in our footbeds. And this also comes from like biodynamic farming. And what we did is just to connect the farmer to our supply chain so that we could replace the raw material, like coming from a biodynamic farm, and then going into our materials. But we are in touch with other partners and also are initiating projects to also replace other materials in the future that we're using now with a regenerative source. So this ranges from, you know, setting up the entire project and finding the people who want to work in this, to, you know, just hooking up with someone who already has some kind of a platform and is in touch with many farmers, and then trying to, you know, to onboard them onto a program. But it's usually, it's not the way around that you described. Like usually most farmers who are already, looking at regenerative practices are, like, we're looking mainly in Europe. So they are mainly focusing on food production. So fiber production is kind of, is something that you need to revive in Europe. And that's actually the biggest chunk of the work, is to get the supply chains running again.
Now, the other thing we talked about during the research we were doing was the microfiber outers, which are petroleum sourced.
Yes.
It's something that you're working on replacing, but it's difficult. Why is it difficult to replace microfiber, and how's the project going?
Yes. This part of the shoe is very much worn. Like, we have this thin outsole, and therefore, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on the lower part of the shoe. And we both need a material that you can glue the outsole to, and it will stick very well. Otherwise, you will, you know, it will start coming off unless you stitch it. Mm-hmm. And then you also need a material that really can take a lot of wear and tear. So for now, this has been both a decision for function, because you can also waterproof the shoes more easily with this kind of material, and also quality and longevity of the product. So we have not been able to find a real alternative to this material, unless we would use leather, and leather has been really difficult. Like, both for, you know, reasons of how, you know, where it comes from. It's very, very difficult to get transparency, and also to have a process that is, you know, not using or very transparent about, like, what kind of substances are being used in the, you know, the tanning and everything. So it's a very difficult industry that we have not been that we haven't felt comfortable to use so far. So any plant-based alternative, whatever we could see, was always that, you know, it looks very green from the outside, and once you get into it and you start digging, then you see, okay, it's really not what you have been promised. So what we're doing now is to, in the spring-summer collection, we can stitch the outsole to the shoe. So the gluing is less of a problem. So we have replaced the microfiber with textile in almost all the spring summer models. So we just left it out. And in the winter models, this is not possible, because we cannot stitch the outsole to the shoe, because then water would come in through the seams. So we're actually developing a new kind of outsole to put on the shoes in order to get rid of the microfiber, because the outsole then we can take off and recycle. And then we have, you know, we can get rid of that, that other part. There's also, we had microfiber in a few other places, which we're also replacing through a new construction. So we can also use our textiles there instead of the microfiber, and still, you know, have a sturdy and strong shoe. So.
I've certainly found it with the Panther that has held up great over hundreds of miles of walking. So it's great. Fabulous to hear the progress. But on the other hand, if the thing stays intact and works, it's also a form of sustainability. So something to think about. Let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back to talk more with Anna Yonan.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
We're back to continue the conversation with Anna Yonan, who is the co-founder of Wildling Shoes. I've been wearing a pair of Wildling Panthers now for about 4.5 months, and they're wonderful shoes. So, Anna, is the shoe industry making serious investments at the industry level in becoming sustainable, or is what you're doing still an outlier and an exception to the rule?
Well, it's always hard to talk about competition. And also, of course, I don't have the full transparency of what's going on behind the scenes. But if I see just on the outside what kind of, you know, offers the shoe industry is making, you can see that it's not, there's the one or other, you know, project that is coming out, the one or other breakthrough also in innovation. So yes, I do think there is work being done and a lot of research and development behind the scenes, but it doesn't tackle the core. So, you know,
it doesn't sound like there's a lot of conversation going on between shoe companies about how to get there either, because all of you could get together and drive for better sourcing, for instance, but that's not happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually the future is in that we get together, that we collaborate, that we stop competing with each other, and rather, you know, if we really mean it, then we should get together and get the solutions more quickly. Mm-hmm. One problem that I see with this is that also the structure that regular companies are set up, you have a few people at the top that are making a fortune. And you have all investors, shareholders, and, you know, and the rest is working. And we put a lot of work into you know, sustainability. And I would love to get together with others and exchange knowledge. But it's always difficult when you know, for example, you're sitting there with another startup and there are investors behind it. And you're just asking yourself, like, who's going to benefit from that? And who are they going to sell it to? And where is this knowledge actually going? And will it really have that impact? So I would, you know, we're trying to find companies that are either, you know, trying to become a purpose company, which Patagonia just did, like to really say, we act like a nonprofit. This is not here to, you know, make a few people like incredibly rich, but this, like, we're doing this in order to find the right solutions. And with companies like that, we can be completely open and exchange knowledge and solutions and really try to get there quicker.
That's an interesting point. One that once we move from the, it's all about making as much money as possible to creating a better impact in the world, you have an incentive to share a lot more information. And you know, as I was saying before, if you can push the suppliers in the right direction as an industry, you can change everything about the industry. Now, you're also committed to becoming fully circular in the long term and carbon neutral. How are you doing on Scope 1 and 2 emissions, which we've talked about before? Where are you on the path to reaching carbon neutrality?
Well, carbon neutrality isn't our focus at the moment. Our focus is in carbon reduction and emission reduction right now. We have Scope 1 and 2 are really just a fraction of our overall footprint, of course, as a producing company. But we have, for example, installed solar panels. We have exchanged the oil heating system to a heat pump. So we're trying to reduce, to actively reduce our emissions within, you know, the scope that we're directly handling. There's like a no-flight policy, all of these kind of things. But I think the more, like, the biggest impact lies in our supply chains and our value creation. So we're trying to, you know, to do a pain point analysis and to really go into the places where it hurts most. Like, we have some things that we can, you know, push forward with our partners, for example, putting solar panels on the roofs of the factories, which is quite easy right now because there's also a lot of funding from the states. And then on the other hand, we need to look into where actually we are creating the biggest emissions. And we have a team working on that, but it's you can't go by, like, the problem is that if you take secondary data, that will be very warped. Like, it will not reflect our current supply chain. For example, then wool would have the biggest negative impact. And the way we source the wool, we actually consider it to have at least a neutral impact. The thing is to really to actually derive the primary data from our supply chain, which is a lot of, like, painstaking, tiny details that you need to get together in order to get a good overview.
We did an estimate, and your shoes do come in at about a quarter of what we believe the average shoe does, and it's impressive. But you obviously can continue to make progress. Now, one of the things that you've done is invest in rewilding. You have a project about rewilding Europe. How does that fit into your sustainability strategy? Are you counting offsets from that against your emissions, or is that just something you're doing to do good?
No, we're not counting offsets this way. We believe that rewilding has a very, very important role to play in climate protection, because rewilded areas, like it's also the biodiversity crisis that we're facing. So rewilded areas can really create some kind of a counterweight to other, you know, other trends that we have anywhere else. So we believe that basically, like a good new landscaping would be, you know, you have rewilded areas where nature is just left to itself. And it's incredible if you see the resilience and the recovery that nature can make within a really, really short time if it's just left to itself. And that really, I think that has a healing quality, not only, you know, for that those landscapes that you can see, but also when you go and visit that, like it really has an impact. And then it would be a regenerative agriculture to produce food, to produce textile, to produce, you know, fiber, but also to not destroy the biodiversity again. So kind of to be a haven, like a soft, you know, you have these different zones, and then you have the circular economy. So those three things is something that we try to combine with each other that's our vision for, you know, a better way of, you know, still living on this planet and creating stuff together, but doing it in a much more balanced way.
Well, and reducing waste is key to this. And you, when we talked again during the research we were doing, you're working to reduce your factory waste. Everything's handmade, which is impressive too. How are you using discarded materials so that they don't end up in a landfill? What's the strategy that you've taken to reduce that waste?
Yeah, at the moment, I mean, one of the biggest things is the design itself. Like how much material is the design, you know, using, and where can we reduce materials, like just from the outset? How can we, you know, place materials on the different, like how can we cut the materials so that the production waste is limited? But still, the production waste is probably the biggest waste producer in our value creation. Besides, you know, the actual product. So there are two things that we're working on, and one is the recycling of the actual product, like the end of life, like a take back system, and to recycle the shoes. I just said before that we can already fully recycle the outsole. So now we're working on the fibers and on the rest of the shoe and how to recycle that, how to reuse that. So there are, like, we have a strategy of, you know, first of all, just collecting everything and finding, you know, a very pragmatic way of reusing that, which could be, you know, you have the scraps, you turn it back into some kind of a fiber and a fleece, and you can reuse that fleece within the shoes. It can replace you know, paddings and all kind of materials. But the goal is to, and in during the production, you can already sort the different, you know, the different fibers. You can sort it into the different materials. And then the goal would be with these partners in Portugal to return the fiber into a yarn so that you can, you know, reweave this into so there are things that are it's easier to do this with, and wool, for example, is quite easily recyclable. And then there are the natural fibers, which it's possible, but it's a bit more difficult. And then usually you also need, like, you know, some amount of virgin fiber again. But we could, you know, we're already using recycled yarns in our materials. We're trying to experiment with it, like what would be the right mixture and how can you reuse that? And then there are some parts that are just very hard to, you know, to recycle in any way. So we're looking for partners that, for example, can turn these materials into construction materials or something else. So it would be some kind of a downcycling, but also again in a circular way, because those materials then in that state that they are in, they can be reused within that state.
Now you're also launching a repair program so the shoes last longer. And I guess out of curiosity, how long do you expect a wildling shooter to last, and how much longer can it last if you repair it?
Yeah. Well, that, of course, very, very much depends on the kind of use. Yeah, we have, and also, of course, on the model itself and what you use it for. And if it's a child that, you know, is very active, or if it's, you know, a grown up mainly, you know, walking through the city. So we have people still wearing our first models, which were, you know, produced in 2015. So that's always a very happy sight when we see, you know, somebody sending in a photo of these old shoes. But we also have shoes like that, let's say kids wear, and, you know, they wear and tear through one after, you know, half a year or something like that. Although we have a very big secondhand market especially for the kids' shoes.
Really?
So we can see that they can also last a lot longer than just one season. But we expect, you know, let's say like 3 years of use, like of really active use, is something that the shoe should be able to withstand. And then when we can repair it, it depends on how you want your shoe to look, right? Like if it's... Yeah. It needs to be sparkling new, or if it's okay that you can see that it's been used. But with that, we can, you know, we can replace the outsole, or we can, you know, a tear or something, we can fix that. So we can fix any item of the shoe, we can repair. So right now, what we're doing is to just do in-house repairs within the warranty period of 2 years. And we want to extend that later to also repairs that you can buy as a customer. So you can, you know, you can just say, okay, instead of buying a new pair of shoes, I just want to buy a repair, and I just want to get a new pair of outsoles, for example. And then you can send us the shoes. But that's kind of like, we're just testing all the processes. And then this will be the next phase of the repair program.
There, the week that we happened to be talking, there was a news report about a scientific study that showed that you could make compostable shoes, and they had some composted shoes to show that actually worked. Many of your shoes are very close to being almost fully biodegradable. How is that project going? And tell us about where you want to go in terms of an alternative end of life, not just, you know, the circular end of life, but if it ends up in a landfill, that it breaks down. Is that an important place to get to?
Well, it's very difficult strategically to go for all of these things at once. Like what we've seen is that if you want a product to really be long lasting and to be recyclable, to be reusable, then very often, let's say, it also being compostable is very difficult. Also because the shoe is made out of so many different materials. And then it's, you know, it can be just the yarn or the kind of glue that will stand in that way. And also, I think there's a lot of confusion around like compostability, because you can return, like it, you can't just, you know, dig a hole and put the shoes inside there, but it has to be within an industrial facility and at a certain, you know, heat and conditions that will then help to decompose the shoes. So my father is a chemist, and he's part of our, you know, recycling team. So he did kind of a lot of like just home tests to see, like he ordered like so-called biodegradable materials, and he, you know, he put them in all kind of like
stuff. I do this stuff at home too, so I totally get it.
Yes. And then, you know, he looked at the stuff under his microscope, and he's like, actually, you don't need a microscope, you can still see the stuff here. So he was not very impressed. And so, I mean, ideally you have a product that you can repair and then recycle, you know, reuse, recycle, and then at the end, it will end up, you know, it can just biodegrade. So that would be wonderful. But so far, we have not found any way to really make this possible. Like there are parts of the shoe that could be biodegradable. Of course, like if you have undyed, unfinished wool, that can just go straight back into, you know, into the soil. Sure. But not the shoe the way it's made at the moment. And also not with a quality and the recyclability that we're aiming for at the moment.
So thinking in terms of longer life cycle, repairability, circularity is probably the more viable way for the industry to go than to think in terms of we're going to make something that breaks down when you throw it away after a year.
I would think so. I mean, the one thing that really bothers me about, let's say, having an outsole that is not biodegradable is that you will have abrasion. And it's actually more than you think it is. Like it's a very thin outsole and you know, you wear them for a year and then you see some scratches, but we're weighing the shoes, you know, after 1 year or 2 years or 3 years. So you can see that there is abrasion on the shoes and this plastic is somewhere ending up in our ecosystems. So that's the point where, you know, we're saying, okay, for now, the solution that we have is okay, but I really hope for the industry to make progress and to actually, you know, get something out there that is also, it's bio-based, it is recyclable, and it is biodegradable, but it's a way to get there.
That's a very honest response. Thank you. I appreciate that. You guys have done great work, and the shoes are really phenomenally enjoyable to wear. People like them. These probably are the most commented upon shoes that I've ever owned. Starbucks, I don't know why, but people drinking coffee look at others' feet. They ask about the Panther. Where can shoppers try on your shoes, if anywhere? Or is it all just direct to consumer through the site?
Yeah, at the moment, it's mainly direct to consumer in the States. We're at the Vegan Fashion Week in LA from the 10th to the 12th of October. And we're also planning a pop-up store in San Francisco, but the date has yet to be confirmed. I think the best way to get in touch and stay in touch if you want to try out the shoes is probably to sign up for our newsletter, because we'll be, you know, sharing all details of developments in that way. So there have been quite a few events this year in the States and in Canada, which is great because we couldn't do this before. So there will be more to come for sure also.
Well, we'll be keeping watch. And by the way, you did send along a 5% discount code. We'll share that in the article that goes with the podcast. Thanks. I hope everybody tries it out. Anna, it's been fantastic talking with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Mitch. It's been fun.
We've been speaking with Anna Yona. She is the co-founder of Wildling Shoes. You know, they were nice enough to send along a discount code that you can use to save 5% through the end of October 2022. So visit us.wildling.shoes and enter the code. You're probably going to want to copy this from the article on Earth911, but the code is Earth911 Wildling Shoes 5, the numeral 5. Earth911 Wildling Shoes, the numeral 5. No space, no dash. You know, as a business story, Wildling's commitments to sustainable manufacturing illustrate the financial benefits of focusing on the solvable problems first and prioritizing environmental outcomes over immediate profit. It's allowed them to stay in business, as well as tell a genuine story that its customers embrace and share. You know, you don't need as much advertising when people wearing your product have a story to tell others about the difference that their shoes make in the world and why it's important to them. And so that transparency that Anna talked about is absolutely critical. Sharing the steps that you're taking, even if those steps aren't perfect, they're the progress that people are all looking for. So you can change your marketing simply by being transparent about what you're doing. And as a sustainability story, the pragmatic approach to specific materials challenges has provided Wildling customers improvements with every season's lineup of shoes. And most importantly, a way to keep their shoes in good repair for much longer, which reduces the overall climate impact of anything that you buy. Make it last longer. It has a lower carbon footprint overall. So check out Wildling Shoes. This is Earth 911, sustainability in your ear. You're going to be able to find us at any of your favorite podcast sources, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and elsewhere. Please take a few minutes to share this podcast or any of the others in our library. There are about 340 of them now. With your friends, family, coworkers, let's get everybody talking about more ideas so that we can create less waste as a result. We're going to be back with another innovator interview soon. In the meantime, folks, please take care of yourself, take care of one another, and let's all take care of this beautiful planet of ours. Have a green day.